White Rocket Entertainment.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
10, 9, 8, 7, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition, 2, 1, 0. We have a liftoff. We have a liftoff, and it's lighting up the area. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center. The Saturn V is moving off the pad. It is now clear of the tower.
Hello and welcome to the White Rocket Podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the Earth Station One Network. It's one long conversation with a variety of guests about the best of popular culture. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and this week I'm again joined by my co-host on the AU Wishbone Show and our semi-regular co-host on this show, John Ringer. Welcome back aboard, John.
Thanks, Van. Glad to be here.
And if you're back aboard, it usually means one of two things. We're either going to talk about James Bond, or we're going to talk about Game of Thrones. What are we talking about tonight?
Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones, that's right. Tonight, we are going to talk about Season 6, and we're going to kind of pick up where we left off after Season 4.
Episode 4.
Yeah, Episode 4, I'm sorry, Episode 4, and continue on through the one that just aired yesterday by the time we're doing this now, which was Episode 7. The Broken Man, I believe, was the name of it. So before we get going, my throat's a little dry. I just had my first day back in class in over 2 weeks. So I'm going to crack open a lovely Minute Maid and go.
While you pour and drink, I'll give the spoiler warning.
Yes.
We are going to discuss the Game of Thrones TV show. We're going to discuss it in detail. We're going to speculate about what's going to happen. We're also going to talk about book references. If you don't want to know things like that, you should stop listening now.
Yes, exactly. Very good. They have been warned. Proceed at your own risk. Before we get into it, I have a little bit of network news. Very excited about this. We've had two shows concurrently from the beginning, mid-late 2012. So going on 4 years that the White Rocket Entertainment Network has had two shows, the AU Wishbone Sports Show and the White Rocket show that you're listening to now for general, you know, pop culture entertainment, like this topic we're about to talk about tonight. We are adding our first new show to be a total of three coming up in just a week or two. And that will be the Avengers Assemble podcast. So we're doing an entire show, an entire series, an entire podcast just about the Avengers. And I'm very excited. We did I'd been thinking about it for a while. I decided to pull the trigger on it on Thursday of last week. And I realized to do it, because it would be a whole new show and not just a separate part of this show, it would need its own, you know, hosting. It would need its own RSS feed and everything. And to do it through the same host system that we do this show through would cost upwards over $100, closer to $200. And so I started a GoFundMe for it on Thursday afternoon, where people could contribute any amount. And if we got to $200, the show is a go. It took 3 days, John.
That's impressive.
3 days, we raised $215 and are able to do the show. And I'm sending out, in the next couple of weeks, I'll be sending out the rewards, because basically I had a Korvac level reward, an Ultron level reward, a Kang level reward, and a Zemo level reward. So people are getting signed books. Two people are going to get to be on the show. Two people gave $50 each and are going to be on the show.
Cool.
And so lots of rewards getting sent out. Also, let me point out very quickly, this coming weekend, starting June 9th, I'll be a guest at Superman Celebration in Metropolis, Illinois. I'll be on Author's Alley. And not only will I have all the Sentinels books, I will also be debuting our new card game. We have a Sentinels Superhero Battle collectible card game, which will only be available at Superman Celebration this coming weekend. After this coming weekend, you'll be able to order it from White Rocket Entertainment. But if you want to get it immediately, come to a Superman Celebration and come by my table, and I'll have the first pressings of it. I'm very excited. It's a cool game. So, all right, let us get into Game of Thrones. What do you say?
I'm in.
All right. So, as I was saying very briefly off the air, just so folks will know, the main thing I want, we're going to talk about a lot of specifics. But the main thing I do want to do is just sort of check in on almost everybody and just sort of establish where everybody is and where they're going, because there's a lot of movement right now on the show. There's a lot of pieces moving around the board. I don't yet get the feeling that we're setting up for the end game, and there's two more seasons to go, so I don't feel like we're setting up for the end game. This is not the beginning of the end, but it may be the end of the beginning, and we're moving towards the beginning of the end. Do you concur about that?
Yes, and we needed this. There's been a lot of stagnation leading up to this point in the series in the last season or so, and we needed forward movement, and we're getting it.
Yeah, that's, I think, why I'm most excited about this season, is because I think that last season, season five, in addition to having the stuff that really turned me off, like burning the little girl and the rape of Sansa and all that, in addition to just the negative stuff that I didn't like, there also were just so many plots that just didn't seem to be moving at all. I mean, Danny was just stuck in Meereen. Arya was stuck with the faceless men washing bodies and stuff. And just, it was just like being on a treadmill. I used to say that, I mean, my quote the other day was that Arya was the girl with no name in the plot that was going nowhere. So finally, you know, there is, for better or worse, some movement even on that front. But I do want to talk about this stuff now. One thing I want to point out, John, I hope that they're saving up all the extra money that they have in the budget, because I'm expecting a full-on ice zombie versus dragon battle coming, and it'll cost like $1 billion for all the CGI rendering it's going to take. So maybe that's why the last two seasons are supposed to be shorter, not 10 episodes each, is because they're compacting the budget. You know, it could be that they're just having to take the money that it would cost to make 10 episodes and using that money to make maybe, you know, 8 that have better effects. What do you think?
That's possible. Money's a factor. And, you know, it costs a lot of money to do the big CG effects that, you know, and it's not unlimited for this series. So that makes sense to me.
Yeah. HBO doesn't have unlimited money. I mean, that's what killed Rome. Rome was a very entertaining show. I really enjoyed it, but they ended up just, they just couldn't pay for it. It was just too expensive. So this show obviously gets better ratings, but it also costs a lot of money. So
yeah, but you can't spend the equivalent of a feature length Avengers movie every single year on the show. You're not making that much money.
Right. So, all right. So that established that we have hopefully big things coming. There really is a feeling now of movement, and including moving away from the books. So we talked a little bit last time about how, you know, because to reestablish with the audience, you've read everything like 15 times. I've read everything except Dances with Dragons, though I have read parts of it too. I stopped after Feast for Crows because the show was coming, and I just wanted to enjoy the show for what it was. I knew I could always go back and read the books later. So what's your feeling now about how they've diverged, gone away from the books and gone out into uncharted territory?
It's really scary as a book reader. You know, up until this season, I really knew what was going to happen to all the characters. And so I knew like who was in danger and who wasn't. Yeah. And now I don't know. So, like, when Arya got stabbed last night, I was genuinely afraid.
Yes.
I was afraid for her. Because the idea that, like, oh, he won't kill her. No, don't think that. Okay? So I was genuinely afraid for her. And, you know, I think it adds something, I mean, to the TV show side, having that kind of fear. But there is – And they have moved away from the books a lot, but there's also – they're kind of bringing back some things that they skipped in the books and kind of bringing those storylines back. And we'll talk about those when we get to them.
Yeah.
No kidding. When Arya got attacked, several things ran through my mind. All right, I'm going to kind of do a quick play-by-play of how I was – what I was thinking as that very quick scene played out. I was like, oh, wow, Arya's got some money. I guess – by the way, let's address that real quick. Since we're talking about Arya, did she get that money from working with the faceless men, or did she sell Needle?
She stole that money from somebody.
Okay, all right. Does she still have Needle?
Yes.
Because I didn't see her. You know,
I thought she had it when she blew the light out or whatever. She has Needle. Yes.
Okay. Good. All right. So here, when that scene played out, she's walking along the bridge. And I immediately see that old lady, and I'm like, oh, it's the Waif.
Yes, the way the old lady was looking at her, it's like, uh-oh.
I mean, you had to be thinking, oh, she's just traipsing all around in broad daylight. Look, it's me, you know? She's just traipsing all around, throwing money around. If she'd wanted to get caught and get found, she couldn't have done it any more, you know, brazenly. And so immediately when I see her throwing money around and being out in the open, I'm like, oh, she's going to be very visible to the Waif. So I'm immediately thinking anybody that looks at her, anybody that comes up to her is the Waif. When it's a little old lady, I'm like, well, that's clearly the Waif. And sure enough, it was. Then she went click, click, and stabbed her, that awful sound, right? At that point, I thought, dream sequence. This is her in her little cave, thinking, what's the worst that could happen? This is her thinking.
That's not how the show does it.
But look, I was thinking, this is Arya saying to herself, this is what happens if you're not smart. And then she goes in the water, and I'm like, crap, I think that really happened. Did you at any point think it was a dream sequence, or did you know the whole time it was real?
No, I thought it was real. You know, you hoped that she was trying to do something like lead the Waif into a trap or something, but,
no.
You know.
I just can't believe she was that dumb.
Well, I mean, she went there to find a ride on a ship out of the city. So that's why she went there. And I think she was trying to stay in the open, you know, where she could kind of see her surroundings or whatever. And she just kind of let her guard down for a second, looking out over the water. So,
well, I guess she didn't. There's two ways to look at it. One is she didn't have the benefit we did of seeing that last scene last week, where Jaqen told the Waif to go kill her.
No, she knew the deal though.
But exactly. I mean, but that's what I'm saying. But the other side of that is she had to know anyway.
She knew the deal when she failed on her assignment to kill the actress, and she picked up Needle. She knew what the deal was. She knew she'd failed out of the Faceless Men, and it's not like you drop out of college and go do what you want. It's you either in or they try to kill you. So
when you play the game of Faceless Men, you kill or you die.
Well, but the other part of this is the Waif failed on her assignment.
That's true.
What did he tell her?
Make it painless, and don't let her suffer, and she didn't get painless, and she didn't kill her.
She could have cut her throat. She went for the gut stab to make it painful.
Ah, yeah. Yeah. Man, the Waif is a horrible human being and needs to die soon.
She's an assassin that works for the God of Death cult. What do you want?
What do we say to the God of Death, John?
Not today.
Today. Not freaking today. All right, so that sort of relieve Arya. She's hobbling down the street, spilling blood. Was there another scene of her after that, or did we just see her hobbling down the street? I can't
remember. No, that's it.
Okay, so somebody's got to help her. Where is she again? She's at She's at one of those cities, but
Braavos.
Braavos. Okay, so is it anywhere near Meereen? Where
no.
Danny no. and Tyrion?
No.
In other words, I'm talking about like Tokyo and Baghdad.
Yes.
Oh, geez. All right. So there's nobody anywhere near her that could help her.
No.
Oh, gosh. I wonder what she would have done if she'd gotten on that ship and gone back home.
Well, let's not answer that question yet.
What was she planning to do? I mean, I really wonder.
I mean, you know, attempt to reunite with her family, kill her enemies.
Yeah.
Find her wolf.
Well, yeah. Well, the first thing she might have done is go to Castle Black and find out that everybody just left, which is we're about to cover, unless she has Littlefinger's jetpack. This is one of my favorite. Have you been hearing this? One of my favorite.
Yes.
I have no problem plugging this show because it's such a fun show. There's a Game of Thrones podcast that's very entertaining, and they have this whole thing about Littlefinger's jetpack, and what they mean is he's able to just be in whatever locale he needs to be at from one episode to the next, like he's got, you know, super speed travel or teleportation or something. I just think that's pretty funny. So he's the fastest traveler, you know, of anybody on the show. So, all right. Speaking of fast, the pacing in this season, I mean, don't you feel like since they are no longer chained to the books with their glacial pacing, that things are picking up a little bit? And what does that say about the next couple of books? Aren't there just two more books?
Yes. Winds of Winter and something of Spring.
Almost it's springtime or something.
Yeah. Yep. I think the pacing has definitely increased. I mean, I think the thing with Dany going to the Dothraki and all that stuff would have taken a long time in the other seasons, and they wrapped it up pretty quickly in this one.
Yeah.
And I think I don't know if it has to do with the lack of books as much as it has to do with, you know, they've got the storyboards out and they're mapping out the last, whatever it is, 20 episodes and saying, this is all we got. There's no more after this. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we got to tell the core story of the core people and get to the ending.
Which is what I was saying to George R. R. Martin for the last 15 years. And he just keeps adding stuff and stretching stuff out, you know?
But there's no constraint like that on him. I mean, heck, he could just write a third book if he wants to. So
I suspect
the TV show creators have to get it done in that time. And it's an ultimatum from HBO. That's it. Yeah. So anything that doesn't move the story forward to get them there, they're cutting it. And or they're making scenes shorter and they're making stories more direct because they have to move the story forward to get us where we want. There's clearly still a long way to go.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point. Let's start with that. You summed it up really well when you said that, you know, the whole Dothraki thing this season. Think about this. At the very end of season 5, Dany had just been discovered by the Dothraki on their horses. In just 7 episodes since then, she's been captured by them, taken to their city, dealt with the old ladies, you know, the widows, mm-hmm. dealt with the council, killed the council, taken over, gathered them up as an army, led them out toward into the desert, and brought a dragon in. All in like 7 episodes, and she wasn't even in last night's episode. So in 6 episodes, she did all that. And like you said, meanwhile, I don't know for sure, but it feels like in the previous 3 episodes put together, she dealt with rebellion in Meereen.
Yes. And like in the 2 seasons before this, you're sitting around Meereen going, man, it's not good.
Yeah, this sucks, man. I need to just randomly go land out in the middle of the desert somewhere. That would get things going for me. And it did. It's a good thing that, what is it, Drogon, the big black dragon?
Yes.
It's a good thing he decided just to go look for some dudes on horses and then drop her off and leave. You'll be fine here, Mom. I got to go eat some sheep. See you later. So, yeah, let's talk about Dany a little bit beyond that. Where do you see that going now? Is she's going to get – because this is interesting to me. She's headed back to her city where Tyrion and Varys are, like, stalling like crazy, right?
Yes.
And when she gets there, she's basically going to have, what, 2-3 armies at her disposal now?
Mm-hmm.
And who's on the way? Because what she needs is, oh, I don't know, 1,000 ships. Oh, guess who's on the way? Yara's taxi service.
The Greyjoy fleet.
Yeah. Now, what's funny is you're going to have 2 Greyjoy fleets coming. Because Yara and Theon stole the existing fleet, and they're taking them to Dany. though Danny doesn't know it, right? They're just going to show up and be like, hey, what's up? We got some ships for you. Pay us. Help us, you know, overthrow these people we don't like, and we'll help you be queen. And then you got Euron, right? Isn't that who it is?
Yes. Yes.
You got him wanting to build an entirely new fleet with the 15 small shrubs that grow on the Iron Islands, apparently, and chase after her so that he is going to show up at Meereen and offer his fleet to Danny along with dropping his pants, apparently. So what do you make of that whole little – because, see, the end of this season, maybe beginning of next, looks to me like a lot of coming together, a lot of convergence. In fact, this season, if you had a one-word description for this season, I would call it convergence.
That's so good.
What do you think is coming for Danny and all those forces coming together, Meereen?
The first thing is, I think she's going to take the Dothraki and, you know, kill all the slavers and take back control of all those cities. She's not going to put up with any of the slaving stuff.
I hope she kills the freaking slavers for good this time.
Yes, she's going to. No mercy. She has the resources now to do it. So she's going to wipe them out, and then she's going to, with Tyrion and Varys' help, put some people in charge there who can handle it. And then the Ironborn, the Greyjoy fleet is going to show up. Yara. That's not her real name in the books. It bothers me. Yara and Theon will show up and offer her ships. And I guess she'll accept and work out a deal with them. But I don't think it's enough ships for everybody.
Yeah.
It could be a thing where the Dothraki go cross-country and everybody else takes the ships. That's possible.
Is there a land bridge I don't know about?
No, but I mean, in the very beginning of the TV show, in season one, where she was living in a city called Pentos, okay, right, which is on the same continent as this, and that's where right outside of it is where the marriage to Khal Drogo took place.
Right.
Pentos is like just across the, you know, the channel basically from King's Landing, you know.
Right.
So you could the fleet comes around to near there. You get everybody back together. You go drop the Unsullied off, and they make a beachhead, and then you go back and kind of ferry the Dothraki across.
Okay.
That's my theory.
You got a bunch of really interesting coalition armies forming, don't you? You have an Unsullied / Dothraki army, and you have a Wildling / Northern Houses / maybe the Eyri army, and you've got now a Lannister / Frey army, and then who knows what the dang Tyrells are up to. I don't know we'll talk about that in a minute. So, okay, so you could have a naval sort of – we're doing this on D-Day, June 6th. So you could have a sort of a Normandy invasion coming across in reverse with Vikings. It's like the Vikings ferrying the Mongols to England.
And they have dragons.
That is so cool. I just love – it's the Vikings ferrying like the Babylonians and the Mongols.
I like it.
Yeah, with like a Nordic queen with her dragons. Man, it's crazy. So that's the whole Meereen thing. We'll see where that goes, but it has been interesting. Because it's always been like it was two different shows. The books are the same way, you know. Everything Danny does is almost like it's off in a whole other series. So it's really good. That's one of the things I loved about Tyrion showing up is anything that pulls Danny into the world with the rest of them, and she doesn't just seem so out on an island, you know, to me is – well, I know everybody else is the ones on the island, but you know what I mean. Okay, River Run. The next – there's sort of three spokes to these convergence wheels. One is Meereen, presumably. And by the way, I enjoyed what we saw of Yara and Theon, where Yara's like, Theon, drink that liquor whether you like it or not. Meanwhile, I'm going to make out with this girl. It's an interesting character, right? You don't get much of that on TV. All right, so the second sort of fulcrum is River Run. The third is Winterfell. We'll get to that in just a minute. So who all is going to River Run? Who's already there? And who do we expect might come there? And what will be the outcome of that?
So River Run is currently held by
the Blackfish,
who is Catelyn Tully Stark's uncle.
Right.
And he has the forces that are still loyal to the Tullys, which are still loyal to the Starks, basically, the King of the North.
Right.
And may even still be flying the flag of the King of the North. And so they basically are like the last outpost that never surrendered when everybody thinks the war is over, but it really didn't end there.
They did for 5 minutes, and then he went back and took it back.
That's right, because the Freys are all idiots.
Idiots, absolute idiots, morons, yes.
So the Freys are there, and they have Catelyn's brother Edmure, who was the actual groom at the Red Wedding, and they're using him as a hostage unsuccessfully.
Unsuccessfully is saying it. Look, this is a guy, if you watch Outlander, that's where you've seen him before. It's funny, in these segments of the show, there's a number of actors you've seen in other things. The guy that plays Edmure is one of the main three actors on Outlander. He's the lady's husband in present day, and he's an awful, awful English redcoat soldier back in the 1700s. So, okay, so you got that going on, and who showed up last night with a whole big army?
Well, Jaime Lannister showed up with the Lannister army and with Bronn,
Yes.
I'm so happy Bronn's still in the show.
Bronn is awesome. And this is interesting. All right, now this is what I wanted to get to about this. I was talking to my wife about this a while ago. I said the thing that's fascinating about this show to me, among many things, is that in most any other show or even book, the bad guys would be the bad guys, and things that you see about them on their own would only reinforce to you that they are the bad guys. But in this story, when we see Jaime and Bronn, they, by all rights, they should be bad guys, right? They should be bad guys. They are on the side we don't like in this conflict.
Easy.
And yet, we like them. That's what I'm saying. That's one of the things that Martin and then the show have been so successful at, more than maybe any other story like this I can ever remember, is making even the people who are allegedly on the bad side as sympathetic and as likable as or more than the people on the good side. Because I got to be honest with you, after I read the first book the second time, John, I like Jaime a lot better than I like Ned.
Well, Ned's an idiot.
Exactly.
But no, the arc of Jaime Lannister as a character is one of the things that makes the book so good.
Right.
He starts out by throwing a small boy out of a window.
Exactly. You should hate him for the rest of the story. Exactly.
Well, having sex with his sister. So you do hate him. And then, over the course of especially after he becomes a prisoner, the stuff with Brienne, her escorting him back to King's Landing and stuff.
Losing his hand.
He's humbled. Mm-hmm. He shows. But also, when he's visiting with Brienne, you learn the real story of the Kingslayer thing. Everybody else spit on him and said he's this guy, he backstabbed the king, and you thought it was just because his family was, changed sides in the war or whatever. But in reality, he saved every single person in King's Landing's life. Mm-hmm. He saved the whole city from getting burned, and nobody knows that.
Right.
But he views himself as this knight who, tries to do the right thing, and he doesn't always get to do the right thing because he's a Lannister and because he's in love with Cersei, but he tries to, so.
I like when he and Blackfish came up to each other on the drawbridge, and they just look at each other, and you hear, Kingslayer, Blackfish. Everybody's got a nickname, and they just throw their little nickname out. I just thought that was hilarious. Okay, so Jaime and Bronn show up, surprisingly lovable, sympathetic characters, even though they're technically on the bad side, like I said. And
yeah. Bronn is the man.
Oh, he's awesome. He's hilarious. And here's the thing. We root for them, right? And yet their job is to take down the side we're rooting for. It's hard. It's kind of like if your child plays for Alabama and you're an Auburn fan. You know what I mean?
Easy.
You know what I mean.
I know what you mean.
You root for the individual even if they're on the wrong team. Here we are. We're rooting for the Blackfish and the Tullys, obviously, because they're the Stark side. And yet we like Jamie and we don't want to see him, you know, done too horribly. And Bronn, of course. So what do you do? What do you do as a fan there, as a watcher?
Well, and the story is about to get more complicated because Brienne and Podrick are about to show up.
Oh, yeah. Hopefully we'll get the great Brienne-Jamie reunion because they had a neat little thing going there for a brief while before they got separated. They were a comedy. This show really – one of the things that this show – and the books too, but this show in particular, I guess because it's a visual – excels at is pairing off unusual pairs and letting them play off each other, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There have been so many pairs, if you think back over the last six seasons, there have been so many times that there will be two characters together, and it's just their interplay. I mean, Jaime and Bronn are a great example. Tyrion and Varys are a great example. But yeah.
Arya and the Hound.
Arya and the Hound, sure. And so so it's really cool to see another. Okay, so that's kind of what's going on at River Run. So Brienne is going there, but not Jon and Sansa?
No.
Okay, it's just Brienne and Pod.
We don't know where Littlefinger's going.
Oh,
He has the army of the Knights of the Vale, and he was going to go north to help Sansa, he says. But we don't know where he is now. He could go towards River Run, which is he was fostered there as a child, and help one side or the other. Or he could stay in the north and theoretically help Sansa. And we could get to that in a minute. We get to the Winterfell conversions. But
didn't he say a couple of episodes ago that they were heading for Winterfell? That he was leading his army to Winterfell?
Yes, and then she told him, go away. We don't need your help.
Okay. Well, but then she wrote him a letter, we think, right?
She wrote somebody a letter.
Who else could she have been writing that to?
Well, she could have written the Blackfish, or she could have written Brienne and said, break the siege, get up here, I need you.
I just feel like she probably wrote Littlefinger a letter and said, I'm sorry I was so grouchy, you know, being raped by my forced husband put me in a bad mood, but I feel better now, hanging out with, you know, John and Ghost and this weird Onion Knight dude, and I'm not in a bad mood anymore, so please, please, please come help me because I really need an army and I want to take Winterfell. And here's what I think her letter ended with, John. You tell me what you think about this. I think it ended with, if you do that, I'll give you my hand in marriage. What do you think?
I don't know if she would promise that because I think he still kind of creeps her out. But
well, yeah,
I think,
but not as much as her last how many ever husbands.
Sure. It's a good question. Like what would Littlefinger want in return for that? He's not doing anything out of the goodness of his heart.
Well, we know that he loved her mother. Right.
Yes, yeah. That doesn't mean that he's doing anything out of love for the deceased Coward Star.
I know. I'm just saying if he loved her mother, and here she is young and beautiful and all that, can't you see sleazy Littlefinger going, if I can't have Kat, I guess I'll take Sansa?
I can, and I thought that for a long time, but at some level, and maybe he will, but I also think on some level that he's putting aside his own desires for that kind of stuff and just playing the game. And so it's whatever move in the game will help him win. In terms of, and maybe it's just having Sansa and Jon owe him.
Well, he was really in the best position of almost anybody about 3 weeks ago. And then when Sansa all but killed him or ordered him killed there, that kind of put his little momentum on hold for a minute, didn't it? Because I felt like going into that meeting with her, he had the little boy wrapped around his finger. He had the army of the Vale. He's one of the most impregnable castles in the whole kingdom. And everything was going Littlefinger's way. He has a jetpack, apparently. Everything was going his way. And then he pushed his luck and went to Sansa. And she's like, I'll kill you right now. And it kind of like his momentum put the brakes on there for a second or two.
Sure.
Okay. So is that everybody that's converging on Fish Castle? River Run.
We did that. Now we're moving on to Winterfell.
Winterfell. Okay. So Winterfell. So you've got obviously Jon and Ser Davos and Sansa are heading there, right? Eventually, once they finish their tour of angry children monarchs of the North. And who else is going there? We can talk about the specifics in a second, but who else is going there? We've got
the Wildlings.
The Wildlings, maybe Littlefinger. Ramsay's already there. I thought there was a lot of power to the scene where they pointed out that their little army, Jon and Davos and Sansa, their little army was camped in the exact same location where Stannis' army was camped. And we know how that little adventure worked out when they got to Winterfell. So, I mean, that for me helped it really hit home that they needed to do something else. They were not going to win against the Boltons with what they had there, because their army that they have there is not as big and ready as Stannis' army was, and his didn't do anything against Winterfell. I mean, didn't even, it was a joke when they got there, right?
They need help. You're right. And it's either going to be Littlefinger or it's going to be some of the northern lords that have allied with the Boltons, betraying the Boltons to help the Starks.
What signs have we got that that's going to happen? Have we seen anything that kind of lends credence to that?
Well, the guy who failed to give, pay fealty to Ramsay.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because he really owes his fealty to the Starks and he's not giving it to anybody else.
That's a good one. Okay. So he could sort of symbolize the larger idea
of the great Northern conspiracy.
Right. Right. It's just, if that would only be that had to only be the tip of the iceberg though, cause that's not much. And we still don't know if that's really Rickon that's being held there. Although John certainly thought so. He mentioned him.
Sure. I mean, you have to assume it's Rickon.
Let's talk about Lady Mormont. What'd you think about her? This is the 8-year-old, 10-year-old mistress of the castle there?
Bear Isle.
Yeah.
I thought it was a great scene. Thought it was really fun. You know, and she's, you know, I guess the niece of Jorah Mormont.
That's the guy over in Essos, right? With
the guy that was with Dany that now he has grayscale.
He's on a quest for antibiotics,
right? And the granddaughter of the former ward commander of the night of the Night's Watch,
right? So they're kind of scraping bottom.
It's a house. It's not one of the bigger houses in the North, but it's a real house off the coast of the North. And, they provided a bunch of soldiers for Rob and they'll die. Remember, there was a woman who was their leader who fought for Rob and she died. So,
yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 You really can't blame these families being like, this is like if you just fought the Vietnam War and then they come back and have a draft like 3 years later. You're like, oh, come on. We just sent all of our kids out and they all got, massacred. We just don't need any more war for a while.
It's that, and the Wildlings are not an asset in terms of recruiting.
Right.
Because the Northern lords view them as enemies.
Right.
So there are more soldiers they could have gotten if they didn't have the Wildlings. Now, the army wouldn't be as big, but it's one of those things. Like, you can't have both.
Yeah. So Yeah. It's, in other words, so Winterfell, you could have a clash there, but clearly Sansa and Jon's side, they're going to need more. They're going to need something more.
Yes.
Or it's not even worth doing. And so do you think they're going to, besides what they got now, besides the Great Northern Conspiracy, because we honestly haven't seen very much of that, we need to see a little bit more of it existing, I think, at this point before we really can believe an army changing sides or something. But is there anybody else? I mean, if Littlefinger's coming there with the army of the area, you got to think that tipped the scales.
Sure. Absolutely.
Okay. All right. How long do you want Ramsay to be dragged out as the villain? I mean, I like him as a villain. I mean, I hate him, but I mean, I like him as a villain. And so, you know, it's kind of like if he's the Doctor Doom of the Fantastic Four movie, how soon do you want Doctor Doom dead and the Fantastic Four just keeping on going without him? I mean, you kind of want him around for a while to be the big bad, don't you?
I mean, I do hate him, and I want him to die slowly and painfully.
Right.
You know, I'd like for Sansa and Theon to torture him for a while, but
exactly.
You're right though. If he dies the next episode, like somebody just shoots him with an arrow and he's dead, then
what are
we worried about in the North?
Right. That's it. I mean,
nothing to happen until the dead guys show up.
Yeah. But make no mistake. The dead are coming. That's a great line. I love that. It's between the living and the dead. And make no mistake, the dead are coming. That was really good, Sir Davos. All right, so that's the convergences. I want to say a couple of things about some other details, and you had a list too. Let's run through them. I got to say, the Renaissance Festival play that we've seen two or three episodes of, I love this thing. I want to see this staged from start to finish in real life. You could never stage an amateur local production of Game of Thrones, but you sure as heck could stage a local amateur production of the Renaissance Festival version of it that we've seen on the last two or three episodes, couldn't you?
Absolutely, and it's great.
I want to see it so bad. And here's my favorite thing about it. You know, we've talked before about how this show, this story, it was largely inspired by the Wars of the Roses. You know, the Edwards and Henrys and fighting each other, the Plantagenets, you know, the
Yorks.
Yeah. Well, you know, in real life, the Tyrion character was a York. He was Richard III, and he was a bad guy in Shakespeare's version. And I love that in the Renaissance Festival version of this story, he basically is Richard III. Because if you've ever seen the play or read the play Richard III, the character of Richard III, the whole play, talks to the audience and says, "Oh, I'm a bad guy. I'm the biggest villain there ever was. Watch this, y'all. You know, watch me do this bad stuff." And that's what the Tyrion character was doing. I'm like, yes, he is full on Richard III. I mean, that was some like subtext stuff there going on. I was very impressed with the writers going back to the roots of that character and basically making the fake Tyrion Richard III. Here's another question I have for you. We were talking about Dany bringing over the Dothraki. Let's say that they bring the Dothraki over. The Dothraki defeat the armies with the dragon's help and the Unsullied. Dany takes the throne. What do 100,000 Dothraki do in Westeros after they're done? Rape and pillage?
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, and if so, does that make Dany an improvement over whatever ruler she just replaced? She's brought 100,000 Dothraki Mongol screamers into this country to rape and pillage everybody?
Well, there's some fan theories that actually hold that Dany is a villain.
Or will play that role ultimately?
Well, not just will play that role, but that she is the villain.
Okay.
That she's coming to invade Westeros with this army of, you know, the Huns, basically.
Yeah.
And these, you know, these slave spearmen, and they don't have any loyalty to anybody. They'll, you know, kill everybody, harass the small folk and sack their farms and all that kind of stuff. And they're not going to be civilized just because she looks at them. So you're right. What's going to happen after that? You know, in I think ultimately we think they're going to all, everybody's going to end up fighting the dead, but you're right. What would happen if like the dead weren't around and she and the Dothraki and the Unsullied conquered? Would they just run rampant, you know, up and down the, you know, through Highgarden and Dorne and stuff, killing everybody? And or would they go back to where they came from?
I don't feel like she's put enough thought into that.
I think she feels like she needs them and she'll deal with it when she gets there.
Right, exactly. She's thinking short term and she hasn't put much thought into the long term of what am I going to do with them once it's over? I mean, because she can't just put them all back on the boats and send them back home. They didn't do all this just to turn around and leave. They did all this with the promise of spoils, right?
And well, they could take a bunch of spoils back with them.
Yeah, and bankrupt Westeros. Take all the treasure back to the middle of the grasslands. I just don't see, you know, even as we cheer for Dany to do this, if you stop and think long term, I just don't see how it ever works out as a good thing. Short of killing the ice zombies. If there wasn't this existential outside threat coming, then it wouldn't have any redeeming characteristics at all. At least that way there might be somebody really bad for them to kill or get killed by.
Listen, if she shows up and cleans house and gets rid of the, you know, the bad parts of the Lannisters and the, I know you're not a big fan of the High Septon and his people and the Boltons and whoever, and the, you know, the regime in Dorne now, if we don't like them, you know, and Euron or whoever, then it's a good thing.
I don't know. I'd rather live in a peaceful, secure society under Euron or under
not Euron, he's a madman.
Whoever, under one of these, than under a Lannister, than I would have, you know, 100,000 Mongols come through raping and pillaging. My gosh, I mean, it's just like with the Romans. The Romans were not very good people at all. But you'd a lot rather live in the Roman Empire than you'd want to live out in the sticks back then. You know, my gosh. Well, anyway, it's an interesting to think about. I haven't heard anybody talk about that. I haven't heard any, you know, you and I listen to podcasts, we read stuff and all, and I just haven't heard anybody address that question of what after they win, if they won. It just seems...
Well, I mean, some people do think she's the villain, like that she has the, you know, she could be very ruthless. She could kill her enemies. I mean, she had all those slavers executed, their heads put on spikes. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
So that's the kind of person she is. She's not, you know, a soft, cuddly person. No. She can be heartless and cruel. And
well, speaking of her, what about Varys? Does Varys want her to win? Does he really support her? This is different in the book, right? Tell us a little bit about Varys vis-a-vis Dany.
In the books, he hasn't gone to Meereen yet. He's still in Westeros. He's still in King's Landing, and he's hiding out in the castle, spying on the people there. Yeah. And Varys, you know, like he tells Ned Stark in the first season of the show, he serves the realm, and I genuinely believe that. Like he wants what's best for Westeros, mm-hmm. And I think he believes that. I mean, clearly, when he looks around, Daenerys would be a better ruler than anybody that's got a shot right now. Better than Tommen, better than Cersei, you know, better than Margaery. So I think that's why he's doing it.
I think that Tyrion would be one of the wiser people kind of in charge. And the thing is that Dany's one of the few people that would, at this point, would have him in a position of authority.
Sure.
Really, I think that's a worthwhile point. That hardly anybody else would be willing to have him in a position of authority after everything that's happened or been blamed on him, right? Whereas Dany values him for his ability, and so that alone makes her maybe a little wiser with regard to him than anybody else.
Because she's judging people on their abilities, right. Not on A, their family, or B, you know, what they heard through the grapevine about him.
Right. Plus, she's been separated from all that, so it's not as an immediate thing for her. What about Dorne? They kind of pitched their little rebellion. They overthrew their ruler, and then we haven't heard anything from them since. Are they going to just randomly show up in the middle of everything? I mean, you know, you got to wonder, are we going to have something about to happen in King's Landing, and all of a sudden you hear clanging, and it's because Euron and the the Iron Isles, Ironborn, have reached the harbor at the exact same time as the Dorne invasion fleet. They're fighting each other. That would just be Cersei's luck, you know? So Cersei, if the two armies both come in to slay her and take everything, run into each other in the parking lot and kill each other outside, and neither one of them gets through the gates.
No, see, what's going to happen is one of them theoretically, say, Euron's Ironborn people are going to attack, the Reach where Highgarden is and raid all that place to get supplies for their fleet or whatever, and they're going to withdraw all their forces from King's Landing in that area.
Yeah, that'll cause them to pull out. Well, the Queen of Thorns is leaving anyway, and we need to talk about that. Let's see. We haven't really hit on King's Landing yet, so since I talk about Dorne and how that could connect, what do you think about what's happening in King's Landing? Let's talk a little bit real quick about the Sparrows and about the Queen of Thorns and Margaery. I have to admit, okay, up front, I thought a week ago that Margaery's inversion was genuine. And the reason I did, okay, I have a reason. It wasn't just that I was sucked in. I thought it was genuine for one reason, which was, why would she try to convert Tommen over to the religion only to have to convert him back once they won? But now I'm starting to think, okay, if she's faking, and that's kind of the conclusion I'm drawing from what went between her and her grandmother, right, this week. Mm-hmm. If she's faking, then she's sucked Tommen sincerely over to the religion side, even when she's not. What does that say about how she sees her future with him? Plus, we found out she's not sleeping with him. You see where I'm going there?
Yes.
I could see her pitching him over the side real quick now.
She's queen. He's king. She can't. If she dumps him, she's back to nothing. He's still king.
Well, what does she do if she's not really with the religious people and he's?
What she does is then she's free now. The whole faking it thing was her ticket out.
Right.
And she needs to get to a place where, for example, her grandmother's out of the city. And because once that happens, they don't have any levers to use over her anymore.
Right.
And then she could start manipulating Tommen to whisper in his ear, say, let's do this or let's do this. Or, I worry about this, and gradually win him back over to her. And then they kind of push the faith out of the way.
You know, one thing I do like about this show and this story is there are so many female characters that are brilliant strategists. And then there's Cersei. and the Queen of Thorns got some really good barbs in on Cersei again this week. I loved her last little bit where she's like, you know, the only good thing that's come out of this is watching you lose again or something. I mean, how do you really feel about it? Cersei's just standing there like, son of a...
She is such a great character.
Yeah.
And so mean, so vicious when she speaks like that. And it was, I wanted to stand up and applaud.
She's the dowager from Downton Abbey of this show. Those that watch Downton Abbey will know what I mean. There's the lady that played McGonagall on Harry Potter, Dame, what's her name? She's like the matriarch on Downton Abbey, and she's exactly like Diana Rigg's character. She has a smart word for everybody, and she's just so too cool for school, you know. Those kind of characters are great. When Game of Thrones ends, we're going to have a third show with an elderly woman who can just cut people down with two sentences, because between the two of them, and John, I don't know if you ever watched Downton Abbey, but you need to watch Downton Abbey a couple episodes and just watch her. She's the whole show. She's fantastic. So a few other things going on. Let's see. We're looking like we're getting closer to Clegane Bowl.
Clegane Bowl means that Cersei has not actually been on trial yet for her crime. She's, you know, religiously she's done her penance, but she still has to be on trial, and she's going to do trial by combat, and she's going to get her new Kingsguard guy, Sir Robert Strong, who is the He'd reincarnated Zombie the Mountain, basically.
Zombie Mountain, yes.
To fight for her.
I'm glad John didn't come back like that.
And the church is going to need to appoint somebody to fight him. And because we had this episode last night where we saw his brother back and living in the country in a very religious, peaceful life, I really believe that Sandor the Hound is going to come back and fight for the faith against the Mountain.
Well, he's definitely ticked off at somebody. And it was the Brotherhood Without Banners that did that.
Yes, which leads me to think there's a whole nother storyline in play coming here.
With the Lady Stoneheart?
Yes, I think I'm putting money right now that the cliffhanger for the season will be Lady Stoneheart.
And explain to the listeners who don't know what that means.
Well, if you don't want to have this, if you haven't read the books and you want to have this spoiled, you need to stop right now and just walk away, okay? But Lady Stoneheart is the leader of the Brotherhood Without Banners. She takes over from Beric Dondarrion, and she is the reanimated zombie of Catelyn Stark.
Boom!
She got her throat cut. She got thrown out of the Red Wedding into the river. And actually in the books, Nymeria fishes her out of the river.
Oh,
okay. Wow. And the Brotherhood Without Banners finds her. And Beric Dondarrion has Thoros Amir put the spark of life back into her instead of into him. And it brings her back. She can't talk because her throat's been cut. But she's on she can communicate with him. She's on a vengeance craze thing against basically the Freys and the Boltons and the Lannisters. And so under her, the Brotherhood, quits doing all this Robin Hood kind of stuff and basically spends all its time luring Freys into traps and killing them.
I like it.
Well, so I think
why would they be messing with a church construction project rather than killing Freys?
I don't know that part. Maybe some of them, maybe they're just, it's showing they're darker and more ruthless. I don't know. That part I didn't like, but I do think she's going to be because they've mentioned the Brotherhood several times and they're back in the Riverlands where she operated and the Freys are now a big part of it. And, I mean, we talked about Ramsay. There has to be big payback coming for Walder Frey at some point.
Yes.
That is happening in this series. And because he broke Guest right, it's going to be an epic payback. And so Lady Stoneheart is seen basically as the instrument of that vengeance.
Wow. All right. We'll see how far they want to go down that road. That's very interesting, isn't it? Last couple of things. Let's see. We didn't get to talk yet about Hodor. And that takes us to Bran and Meera and Cold Hands and Hodor and the Three-Eyed Raven and all that stuff. So let me run through a couple of things here and kind of lay out where I'm wrong and right and what I'm leaving out. So we touched on this a lot in our last episode. If you folks haven't heard it, go back an episode or two, and we talked about it three episodes ago. Bran and Meera were up north of the Wall, and they were sort of doing an internship with Mac von Sydow. And Bran was slowly being brought up to speed on history and stuff. But then he does something stupid and accidentally lets the White Walkers in and have to flee. And that's where we discover where Hodor's name came from. So what did you think about that? We haven't talked about that yet, have we?
No, we haven't.
So what was your reaction to the whole Hodor reveal at the end of two episodes ago?
My gut reaction that I sent you that night was Bran is a moron because he goes off on his own and finds the Night's King, and the Night's King touches him, and that's what allows them to bypass the magics of the cave and come kill everybody.
Right.
So everything that happened there is Bran's fault for being stupid.
One of the themes of this story seems to be that a lot of the Starks are dumb and deserve what they get or don't get.
Well, it's that, wisdom is painfully earned sometimes. How about that?
Yeah, and the women are suffering the pain and learning. The guys seem to just get killed or do something that gets people killed.
They suffer and learn, too. I think Jaime's done some of that. I think Tyrion's done some of that. And I think Bran's doing some of that now. And I think maybe Theon's doing some of that. But So in this case, the Hodor hold the door thing, I didn't see it coming. I thought it was a great story point. I thought it was very moving. I don't think there's all these fan theories about how Bran is all powerful and all that kind of stuff.
That's all.
And he can travel through time and change everything. I don't believe any of that.
No, that's stupid. No, I think that's just people kind of wildly speculating out of control. I don't think that's where this show has ever been going.
No, I thought the reason for Bran's powers and the Three-Eyed Raven was to find information about history and what's happened in terms of the White Walkers so that he could communicate that to other people who were leading the resistance against them, but Jon theoretically, and help them win. To me, that's what Bran's role or the Three-Eyed Raven's role was all along, not any of this time travel and manipulate stuff thing.
Right. Last character we haven't really touched on, as far as I know, is Sam. I get everything that happened with him, and one thing I really think needs to be pointed out about Sam is, we're sitting there watching him taking this abuse from his father, which should be expected because we knew this was the man that kicked him out of the family and drove him to the wall to take the black in the first place. How nice could he be? Sam kind of took the abuse at dinner and everything because he just wanted to make sure that Gilly and little Sam, that he didn't do anything to screw it up. But then when he decided to leave and take them with him, he takes the sword. Is that more of a plot device that he needs to have a sword where he's going and so he took it? Is it justifiable within the context of characters in that situation where it happens? Did that ring true for you? He took it.
Sure. I mean, he hates his father, and it's his sword. He's the firstborn son.
Well, it's his father's sword, though. His father's still alive.
I understand that. He's supposed to inherit the sword, though. And his father has said, no, you're not going to inherit the sword. So his father's trying to change the rules. So I get it. I mean, the dumb part of it is if Sam just left, they'd be okay. But right, by taking the sword, he guarantees they're all coming after him.
Exactly. Which just seems, again, I mean, I don't see what he gains by taking it, but I see a lot more risk and a lot of loss because he did. So I'm just not quite sure, other than if it serves story purposes that he needs to have it later in the story, I'm not quite sure why he would do it. Because everything else he does on that episode was to make sure they were safe. I mean, he took a lot of crap to make sure they were safe when any normal person would be like, hey, I'll kick your ass. And yet then he turns around and does something that's so blatantly putting them at risk. You see what I'm saying?
I agree.
Well, we'll see. So where are they going now? Are they going to the Citadel or whatever?
I believe he's still going to the Citadel. He has things he needs to learn to be able to ultimately help.
Yeah. All right. I think we had a few listener questions.
We do. Some of these we discussed, but we're going to go through them real quick.
John and I do this on our football show, and now we're doing it on the White Rocket Show for once. We'll see.
All right. James Jones asks, do you think the show writers made the call for Benjen to be Cold Hands, or did George R. Martin change his mind?
Yeah, because allegedly Martin had said that they were not the same character, and then we pretty much find out on the show. Well, they never called him Cold Hands, though, did they? But he's serving that plot point, that plot purpose, right?
Yes.
Okay. You know more about this than I do. I don't know much about the character. What do you think?
In the books, Cold Hands is a semi-undead former ranger who helps basically Sam and Gilly get down to the wall, and then helps Bran and Mira and Jojen and Hodor get up to the cave. And then we don't see him because in the books we haven't gotten to this point yet. So, but you never reveal that it's Benjen Stark. But he's clearly he's undead, but he's not a bad guy.
Right.
If that makes any sense. So you don't know whether he's Benjen or not. But he keeps his face covered and stuff. But he isn't. eat or any of that sleep or any of that kind of stuff. So I think that the show writers changed this for basically narrative purpose to have a character that people would recognize, help Bran, and not just some strange guy appear out of nowhere that nobody was expecting.
Right, because that wouldn't make any sense at all, and you have to set it up.
That's right.
Yeah, I agree. This is what the other show calls Martin's Razor, which is you just simplify things down to where they work, but they don't have to take a huge bunch of explanation. You just bend things together and consolidate.
Consolidate characters into one function.
Yeah, to one. That's a good way of putting it. Okay, what do we got?
KC1, who's at Brave Man Fan, says, does this season seem a little too predictable? I feel like the quality is slightly down, perhaps because it's past the books.
You know, I think that part of that is just people know it, and so they're looking. I don't think that's all of it, but I think a lot of it is that people are very aware that we're past the books now, and so they are I'm not saying necessarily that the person who wrote that question is or anything, or anybody in particular. I'm just saying I feel like that part of it is that people are – it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy, okay? The other thing is it's behaving more like a normal quote-unquote story because we're moving toward the end now. I guarantee you, if Martin's going to wrap things up in the next two books, the book are going to have to start moving at this pace too, becoming a little more conventional, or he's not going to get to the end.
I agree. Yeah. And I think the show impact, you know, we had some big impact episodes. We had the Hodor thing. You know, we had the High Septon showdown. We had the... the John and Sansa reunion, John coming back to life. I mean, there's been a lot of big stuff in this season.
Absolutely.
And I think we're, you know, clearly we're headed towards the episode where we normally have the kind of peak.
Yeah.
Next question, and this is a really good one, from Al Cortero, who says, are there too many rebirths, people coming back from mortal wounds on this show, yes or no?
Well, that's why I'm more reluctant and skeptical about the Lady Coldheart than you are. You're coming from the standpoint of it's in the books and it works and it's cool, so I could see him doing it. And I'm kind of coming from the point of I'm not sure they really want to go there just because it does kind of give that impression of, you know, nobody's death final. You know, this is a show that's based 90% of its reputation on shocking deaths. And when you start making death cheaper, less permanent, it takes some of the power out of the whole show, I think. What do you think about that?
I agree. It does take something away when death isn't final.
Right.
But, again, that character is already in the books and it works, and it was a gigantic cliffhanger at the end of one of the books, you know, that literally left me shocked. So I think they could do that just for the shock value it would have. But at the same time, you're right. Like, you know, what if, you know, John died and he's not dead. Some of these other characters, I think it could be the same way. But I don't think everyone who's alive right now is going to make it.
No,
it's absolutely not going to happen.
Yeah, there's going to be another king on the throne in King's Landing before Danny ever even gets to Westeros, I'm pretty sure. I think Tommen's days are numbered. And plus, there's the whole prophecy thing where if Cersei was told her kids would all die, you know. So
right. Well, I'm not even talking about Tommen. I'm talking about major characters, you know.
Okay.
Whoever, Jaime, Brienne, Sansa, Littlefinger, you know, somebody of that level certainly I think is going to die.
What characters would you be willing to say there's no way they die till the very end? I think there's no way Sansa dies, and I think that there's no way Tyrion dies.
I think Sansa could die.
Okay.
I mean, it would be tough because she's been through a lot. That would be a really crappy thing to do, but I think Arya could die.
Man. Now, after all this, I think the characters that have been off on their own side story can't die because it just, what was the point?
So, I mean, I think Arya could die, but I think Arya will get some vengeance first and then die.
That's, I mean, that's fair. I hope she doesn't. I like her a lot, but yeah.
Sure. I mean, I think Tyrion could die. I hope not. He's my favorite character.
Yeah.
But.
Okay. Any other questions?
But I would say again, I would have said Jon Snow before last season.
So. Well, right. Yeah. I was going to say that. Exactly. I was totally going to say that. And he did. But he came back. So that kind of makes the point, though, you know, that even when somebody that important dies, they're not really dead. They bring them back. So
that's right.
All right.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. So our last little question then is, where does things go from here? Where do you see the rest of the season going, and what's our cliffhanger going to be? What's going to be the big throwdown in episode 9? Because episode 9 usually is the episode where something big happens, and 10 kind of cleans it up. So what do you see coming with 9 and 10?
I think 9 will be a showdown at Winterfell and River Run. Ooh. And I think Brienne will show up and talk to Jaime, and that'll be a big moment. And then, you know, at the end, you know, Daenerys comes home with the Dothraki and cleans up, and maybe the fleet sailing into the harbor or something at that point.
This season?
Yes.
No, I don't think so. I don't think Dany gets back this season.
I bet she's back next episode.
I think Dany. Oh, I think she gets to Meereen next.
No, that's what I'm talking about. So she's in Meereen.
Oh, okay.
Cleans up the slavers before the end of the year. And like the fleet's sailing in at the end of the season or something.
Yeah, I could see episode 8, Dany's back in Meereen. Episode 9, Yara and Theon show up with the ships. And then, but we only see a little bit of that because most of episode 9 will be like the big battle of Winterfell or something like that. And whatever's going on at River Run.
I've told you my theory. I think it's going to be Lady Stonehands, and I think it's going to be like Brienne and Jaime in Mortal Jeopardy.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah, okay. All right.
Okay.
I'm not quite sure where that's going, but I feel like he's going to come rolling in, and one way or another, there's going to be a resolution that he's either going to be with them or against them, and they're going to have that big army behind him. That may even happen this next episode.
If he's against them, they're dogfighting.
Well, I know. All right. But that ain't going to happen. I mean, he's with them. He's going to support Sansa. I think he genuinely feels bad.
I don't trust his feelings at all.
And that's probably wise. That's very wise. All right. Any last thoughts?
Nope, other than I'm enjoying it, and I'm looking forward to it all winding down here.
What do we say? What do we say when our wives ask us, is your podcast going to keep you up all day tonight?
Not today.
All right, we'll see you later, gang.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.